First case, this is City of Henderson and Cannon Cochran Management Services versus Jared Spangler. City of Henderson is the appellant. And representing the appellant is Daniel Schwartz. And would you introduce your co-counsel too? Yes, come on up because on the microphone.
Actually, at the table with me is Erin Long from the City of Henderson.
Oh. All right,
Ms. Law, thank you. She's just here to observe, Your Honor.
And also we have on the other side here, Lisa Anderson, and your co-counsel?
Your Honor, this is the respondent, Mr. Jared Spangler.
All right, Mr. Spangler, all right. So I was correct at the beginning when I said the parties were here. I lucked out on that. There was a request for media coverage for these proceedings, too. And we, our media liaison person is here today, Michael Sommermeyer, who's seated over here, so he's coordinating with the media people. The court received written requests this morning from two different media sources to cover the proceedings today, the Las Vegas Review Journal and also the organization Our Nevada Judges. Mr. Sommermeyer advised me that counsel has no objection to the media coverage for today, is that true?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Therefore, the request from both organizations is granted, and the court has prepared a written order to authorize this. As for the next case, we'll have to repeat this process. All right. Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Schwartz. No time's been held against you yet. You have 15 minutes. Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. All right. So be it. That's the order. All right, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Daniel Schwartz and Louis Brisbois on behalf of the appellants in this matter. What we have before us is, obviously, as you've indicated previously, is a workers' compensation claim. This comes to us via an order from the district court from Judge Scotty, and I just would like to go through some of the issues that we have with that order and why we would ask you to reverse that order. Judge Scotty has indicated in his order that this claim is governed under Nevada Revised Statute 616. He has indicated that the respondent has sustained a series of accidents or injuries specifically resulting in hearing loss, and so therefore the matter should have been adjudicated under NRS 616, which deals with industrial injuries, versus NRS 617, which deals with occupational diseases. We have issues with that, which I'll get to in a second, but I would also like to point out that the appeals officer actually did adjudicate this under both. The appeals officer's decision, as we've been told by the Supreme Court we must do, actually goes through the analysis under NRS 616C and then goes through the analysis under NRS 617. So it actually was analyzed under both below in the we'll call it a trial court, not the judicial review court. Judge Scotty then goes on to indicate that the appeals officer failed to consider NRS 616C175. And NRS 616C175 is what I would call a burden-shifting statute. If the party invoking that statute can prove certain things, then the burden shifts to the other party, in this case, my client, to disprove what they've alleged. The interesting thing about applying NRS 616C175 is we actually have a statute under the occupational disease law that is almost identical, and that's NRS 617.366. So there really was no reason to call this a 616 claim because the legislature's already contemplated having the same exact type statute in NRS 617, and it's there. So Judge Scotty could have just simply said this is an occupational disease claim and it needs to be analyzed under NRS 617.366, but he didn't. Circling back to that decision to make this an NRS 616C claim, a couple things I would like to point out to the court. First, that actually was not briefed or argued by either one of the two parties. That really hasn't been an argument that this should be a 616C claim. We felt it was a 617 claim in all the briefs and in all the decisions. I also don't necessarily follow legally why this is a 616C claim. Our Supreme Court has said that a masseuse, for example, who constantly applies pressure with her thumbs, and each time she applies that pressure, she feels pain, is a 617 claim. And that's Desert Inn Casino and Hotel v. Moran, 792 Pacific, second 400, a 1990 claim. But I did a little bit of research, actually a lot of research, but to try to figure out if there's anything that I could find from another jurisdiction, from a case in Nevada, from anything that would say this type of claim, meaning someone who is indicating that they're exposed over the course of time to loud noises, would be an accident or injury. I found nothing in Nevada to support that position.
So let me ask you this, and this I'm going to make my question a little bit longer kind of for the benefit of the audience here today. So what Mr. Spangler is alleging is that he served as a police officer for the city of Henderson for 11 years, and over the course of 11 years, he suffered progressive hearing loss because of 11 years of driving around in a car with a siren, 11 years of shooting at the range every few months, of having an earpiece in your radio earpiece in your ear all the time. And so he suffered this progressive hearing loss. But the statute that we're talking about here, 030, which talks about accident, the purpose of it appears to be to differentiate long-term things versus short-term things. The idea being, philosophically, everybody who has a job, your body's going to be worn down, right? If you start a computer for 8 hours a day, over the course of 20 years, you're going to lose your eyesight. If you work in assembly line, you're going to get repetitive motion diseases. If you have a job that requires you to stand, you're going to get back injuries. And those things are not compensable because they're just what happens when you have a job and have to do something, you know, day in and day out. And the idea of the statute here is to differentiate an accident, a single incident that results in an immediate injury. That's compensable, but sort of this long-term degradation of your body is not. Would you agree that that's sort of the philosophy of what's going on here?
I would respectfully disagree.
Okay.
The very nature of the occupational disease claims is exactly what you just described.
Right. I'm talking about the accident statute. The occupational disease thing is a different thing.
Oh.
But the accident statute. So here's my question. So Mr. Spangler is saying that this happened over 11 years, and the district court's order seemed to treat this as, okay, instead of a long-term chronic thing, like an occupational disease, it was a series of discrete accidents and not just this chronic thing. So what's your response to that?
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple things. Number one, there's absolutely no evidence of that in the record. There's nothing in the record to indicate a number of discrete events that occurred leading up to this. Number two, in the record, you will find that an identical claim was filed by Mr. Spangler back in 2006, and it was denied, and no appeal was filed. So wouldn't that be the law of the case? That would be part of our argument as well. But with regard to the idea that these are a number of discrete events that are happening over time, that would also invoke, if we're looking at this under NRS 616C, the need for there to be notice, for there to be a claim form. In my brief, I cited you to the Barrett Goldstrike mine case, which stands for the proposition that there absolutely must be written notice and a claim form for every single 616 claim. None of that exists in this case. The only thing in the record on appeal are two claim for compensation forms, the one for the denied claim that wasn't appealed and the one for this claim, that are identical, that Mr. Spangler indicated over the years, I've been exposed to noises and now my hearing loss is present. Hearing loss tests over the years showing that his hearing loss did in fact get progressively worse, that's in the record. But there's nothing in the record that indicates that these discrete events happened as Judge Scotty indicated they did. Even if they did, the issue would be where's the claim notice, where's a claim for compensation? Where are any of those things that would be required under 616C? 617 makes it somewhat easier when it comes to the notice provisions, because notice is not required under 617 until you have knowledge of your disability and its connection to your employment. Under 616, notice is required when you have an event. So each time he had an event, there would have been a notice requirement triggered, and there are no notices of each of those events. Under 617, I believe our legislature wanted exactly the case you have here, which is he has some exposure. His hearing loss gets progressively worse. It doesn't get progressively worse right after the exposure. It's getting progressively worse. So he wouldn't know under 617, that he has a disability in its connection to his employment. He just knows his hearing loss is getting worse. We didn't argue anything about timeliness of claim reporting, because under 617, the triggering event is much different than under 616. So if, in fact, Judge Scotty is correct, where are all the notices that are required by case law and statute for each one of these events? They don't exist. It wasn't argued. We didn't have any evidence of it, and there's nothing in the record on appeal that would indicate that happened.
Mr. Schwartz, could you clarify under the disease portion of this, was it ever verified if Mr. Spangler had a condition, call it disease, call it something else, before the first claim was made? There was a reference to it, right. But I didn't see a definitive statement that he had one or he didn't.
So Mr. Spangler came to work and had a pre-hire physical, which you have a copy of the hearing portion of that. That shows hearing loss. Dr. Manthai, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, in the first claim, went through all of that in the report that you have in the record and indicated what he felt was there prior to hire and what he felt he was there in 2006 when Dr. Manthai saw him on the first claim. So there is documentation of hearing loss coming in, but as far as is there documentation that there was some type of claim or injury or occupational disease prior to coming to employment, no. All we have is the physical, just the hearing loss. We didn't gave you only the relevant portions.
So what if that condition was exacerbated because of the loud noises he experienced over the years?
And that was exactly where I was going next, so I thank you. The statutes, either 616C175 or 617366, have a requirement before we even get to whether it was exacerbated or made worse or aggravated. And actually, two-thirds of this court ruled on this issue previously in one of my cases. And what the two of you said was that you don't get to shift the burden to me in this case unless you can show under 616 that you have an accident or injury arising out of and in the course and scope of your employment, or under 617 that you have a condition arising out of and in the course and scope of your employment. So you have to meet your burden of having a claim before you shift the burden to me, before we even have to look at those analyses. And in this case, the appeals officer, as a finding of fact, concluded that two audiologists who indicated, in essence, the speculative terms that have been shot down in the Horn case, and one MD-ENT who said no to Ms. Anderson's question as to whether this arose in the course and scope of employment, means that Mr. Spangler can't meet his burden of showing that he has a condition, an injury or an occupational disease, that arose out of an...
Finish your thought, please.
That arose out of and in the course and scope of his employment. So under the Gattullo case, we don't even get to the analysis because he can't meet his burden to show he even has a claim.
All right. It's your choice whether you want to end now. You certainly at a logical point if you want to.
I would like to save some time for the end, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. That time will be reserved for the appellant. Go with the respondent, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Lisa Anderson on behalf of Respondent Jared Spangler. Your Honor, when we argued this case in front of the appeals officer, the claimant definitely presented a 617 case for an occupational disease. An occupational disease is something that happens to somebody over time. And yes, there was a description given by Your Honor earlier about having just the nature of your job, of standing, of something happening to you every day in your work. But that's not exactly what happens to a police officer when he's in the course and scope of his employment. Mr. Spangler is not exposed to sirens and gunshots every single day of his employment. This is not your typical repetitive injury, but it is something that he is occasionally incurring as he's doing his job. And it's loud. It's a big thing. It's not something that just creeps up on him. So he's having these exposures, and he's noticing that he's having some problems with his hearing. When he filed his claim in 2006, he made a prima facie case. He had a C4 form. He filed a claim. But in order to have a compensable claim, you have to meet all of the elements of the statutes that are involved in 617. At that time, it was determined he had not met those burdens, and he did, in fact, lose that particular case. But that's not the end of his life or his career. So he continues to have these exposures as he continues to work in service to his community as a police officer, and he continues to be exposed to these particular aggravations of his condition. And he files another C4 form because why? He went to a test, a physical, that showed that his hearing had dramatically decreased again. So he filed another claim, and he had additional medical evidence that he supplied on this particular claim. What's interesting about workers' compensation is we have a timeline, and we have, in this particular case, physicals and tests that we can watch and see how they change. When his claim was denied in 2005, he had a particular hearing loss that is documented. When he files his claim in 2016, he has another particular hearing loss that is documented, and they can be compared.
Workers' compensation has apportionment statutes. We have situations where you can have a non-industrial condition that is aggravated by your job, and you are still entitled to those benefits with an offset or an apportionment for what happened or is caused by something non-industrial. That's where 616C.175 came in, or as Mr. Schwartz properly pointed out, 617.366. This is the aggravation that we're talking about. This is what Mr. Theobald, the audiologist, was referring to in the medical records that are before the court, and what Dr. Becker was commenting on when he said that the claimant's current hearing loss is contributed to by his job.
Ms. Anderson, let me ask you this question, though, because to reach 616, we have to look at the definition of accident, and that is somewhat problematic. So do you believe that these series of events that occurred could be defined as accidents under the statute?
They would be defined as accidents under the statute if they caused an immediate need for treatment. The 616 statute has a finding that you have to not only have the accident or the exposure, but an immediate need for medical treatment and for benefits. If you have this...
And a report has to be made, doesn't it?
Yes, a report does have to be made, Your Honor.
And you can time limit.
You can have one without the other. I agree. You could have an incident that had a time limit that started to run, and you could miss your time limit. But if you never need medical treatment because of something that happened to you, it does not fall under the statute of being an actual incident. So if medical treatment was not sought for these various incidents, then they are just consequences of the employment. They are part of that daily impact that is happening to the officer as he's working. So he did not have medical treatment for his hearing loss between 2006 and the filing in 2016. So he didn't have documented incidents. I do think that Judge Scotty got...
We understand it's an extremely precarious situation because it's not one overwhelming event. It's a series of events. But I think the question was directed to the definition that the legislature's given us. Does it really even apply when we're talking about this type of situation? Is that an accident under Chapter 616?
But the claimant filed a C-4 form in 2016 with no date. If you look at the C-4 form, which is found in both appendixes before you, very early on, I believe page 1 or 2, actually, of the first appendix, he doesn't put a date because he doesn't have a specific thing that happened to him. He didn't file what I didn't argue a 616 case. I did argue a 617 occupational disease case. And Your Honor, Judge Scotty below got caught up in the 616C.175 language and continued to argue about the multiple exposures. But multiple exposures is what defines a 617 case. So you have somebody with carpal tunnel because of multiple exposure to typing. So you have this hearing loss case for this officer for the multiple exposures to the loud noises in the daily course and scope of his employment. Not one of those incidents caused the need for medical treatment, but the culmination and combination of them throughout the years caused the hearing loss that he brought before the court.
And that's why you argued 617 instead?
Absolutely.
So what about meeting the requirements for that one? You just heard the argument from Mr. Schwartz. I mean, he made some points that are technical, but they're specific under the statute.
So when we go back to the appeals officer's decision and order in this case, she had 17 findings of fact. 16 of them were to a 616 case. Only one was to the 617 case. And that's finding of fact number 17, where she simply concluded he did not meet his burden under 617 and then restates the statute. There was no finding, no explanation of why he did not meet a 617 case. So in both of the briefs before you, we've laid out the entire language of 617 that would apply to an industrial disease case. And when you just start reading them, every single one of them are found in the record and in the findings of fact for Mr. Spangler's case. So it's an occupational disease defined as chapter shall be deemed to arise out of and in the course and scope of employment if there's a direct causal connection between the condition under which the work is performed and the occupational disease. Dr. Becker said that the repeated exposures to the gunshots and to the sirens contributed to the eventual hearing loss.
So the claimant... Anderson, how do we reconcile Dr. Manthe's initial report in 2006 to suggest that the hearing loss may not have been in, occupationally related but preexisting to some other event. And does that affect our analysis or the analysis under 617?
Dr. Banthi made a determination in 2006 as to the evidence that he had before him and the hearing loss that Mr. Spangler was experiencing at that time. And that is an unrefuted determination for 2006. How it affects determining a 2016 claim is that that's a baseline. I mean, this is something that's been established as non-industrial. There was a finding that everything that happened before 2006 was not contributed to or caused by his work. But we do definitely have medical opinions and testing at that time in 2006 that lays a baseline that when he makes a claim 10 years later can be used to establish if there's a progression of those symptoms and if the progression is directly related to his continued employment as a police officer.
Do you think that's why the judge was focused on 616 as an aggravation of a pre-existing non-industrial condition to address the issue of relief?
I do think that that's why he came up with 616C.175, because it specifically talks about if you have a non-industrial condition. And I would concede, and I've always conceded, if you have a claim that you file and it is denied, anything that is the result of that was non-industrial. So it's established in 2006 that the hearing loss that he had established at that time was not caused by his work. No connection. After, the same burdens exist. If we had no doctors now, I mean, or if Dr. Manthi came into this case and said, still not work-related, he would have a big problem. But we have Dr. Becker saying that his continued exposure over the even now more extended period of time has contributed to the fact that he has hearing loss. And kind of the lucky thing for the claimant is you can test it, and you can measure it, and you can see the difference. The lucky thing for the insurance company is you can test it and you can measure it. So they will never be asked to pay for something that they are not responsible for, because it was deemed in 2006 that everything that came before that is not their responsibility. But if we test it now and we find that he has met his burden under 617, they're only responsible for the hearing loss that comes after 2006 and at the time that he files his claim in 2016. So the things that we think might be a negative turn out to be a positive to both particular parties in this instance, and the fact that the claimant has contained within the pages of that decision and order are all of the findings that could be used to make the argument for the 617 case, but they were analyzed by the appeals officer under 616 and summarily dismissed in finding of fact number 17 as not applying to this particular statute. But you can go down to the first four requirements of 617.440, and all of them are met and contained in the record before you, and in fact, mentioned in the decision and order that the appeals officer had. I concur with opposing counsel, Mr. Schwartz, that Judge Scotty was struggling between 616 and 617, and I do think that he made ultimately a correct decision. He just got a little bit caught up in the 616 versus 617 argument. But the claimant, his case lies in 617. That's what's happening here. There's no date on his C4 form because there's no one incident over all that period of time that he can point to. But that's the nature of a 617 case, is that nobody can ever say it was this one day, this one thing. It was the repeated exposure that he had while he was performing his job that caused the particular incident. And he has medical evidence that he has not only the hearing loss, but the questions were directly asked of providers if the loss was contributed to by those particular things in his line of employment, and the doctors said yes. So the claimant has done everything in his power to present the case under 617. The 616C.175 argument did muddy the perception below, but there is a statute involved in 617 that covers the exact same argument. So if the claimant has a non-industrial pre-existing condition, he has to show that his work experience has somehow contributed, aggravated, and/or worsened his condition, which the reportings from Dr. Becker seem to support that particular contention.
You mentioned one of the doctor's opinions. We have a lot of doctor's opinions in this case, though, and they're not all consistent. In fact, they're inconsistent in some areas. Don't we have to defer to the findings from the appeals officer regarding this testimony and these reports?
You are not allowed to reweigh the evidence this is correct, but if the evidence is there but it's applied to the wrong portion of the case, then that is a misapplication of the law and a misapplication of the statute that was being argued. And for sure, the job of this court is to make sure that the law is correctly applied and that the evidence that is relied upon is put in the right place and that there is substantial evidence to support the determination that comes from the appeals officer based on the statutes that were being argued. So if the evidence is put to a burden under 616 and it should have been under 617, then the court is, of course, allowed to determine that it was improperly analyzed by the appeals officer below.
Any other questions?
Go ahead.
If we look at 616, the statute that the district court judge applied, does it require us to redefine what the term accident means or extrapolate it in such a way that it may not make sense in terms of how it is written under 616.030? Or can each of these singular events be an individual accident, something that we might not be able to see or perceive necessarily at the time that it's happening, but that doesn't necessarily mean it did not occur? I'm trying to grapple with the definition of accident if we do apply the 616 statute.
If you apply the 616 statute, you would have to take every single exposure that happened that was somehow connected to a hearing loss and analyze it separately. But the second prong on a 616 case is not just the reporting of the incident occurring, but the direct need for medical treatment following the incident. That's the reason that the statute requires that they report it within 7 days, that they seek medical treatment within 90 days of reporting it. Because if you have something happen to you, but it causes no injury that requires medical treatment, it's not really an accident. Part of the definition of an accident or injury is that need for medical treatment after. So if you string together a bunch of things that have happened to somebody in their lifetime that on the surface might look like an accident, if there's no medical treatment required, there's no loss. It was simply something that happened to them, but it did not cause the need for medical treatment, nor was it a viable claim at that time. So every single little incident that is affected and ultimately becomes a 617 disease case would fail on an analysis of 616 if they stood alone. So that's the purpose of the 617 statute, is that there are things that we do at work or things that happen to us at work over the length of the job that cause the need for some kind of medical treatment different than an injury.
So let me ask you this question kind of as a larger policy, getting away from the exact words of the statute, but as a larger policy thing, why the statute exists. So, you know, I've never served as a police officer, but, you know, I've known many of them. And I imagine loud noises are just part of the environment, right? You have to go to the range every now and then, fire gunshots. You have to wear the earpiece. You're driving around in a car with sirens on. Like you said, not every day, but pretty regularly. So I imagine a fair number of police officers do, at least over the course of a long period of time, suffer some hearing loss. So given that, whether you classify this as a series of accidents or as an occupational disease, what police officer in that environment wouldn't be entitled to compensation? Is this sort of an automatic, every police officer who loses their hearing because of the nature of the work is entitled to compensation?
Wow. No, because they still have to meet the standards in the statute. I mean, there is hearing loss that happens to people that might not be related at all to loud noises, et cetera. But, I mean, in our practice, we represent hundreds, maybe thousands of officers, and not every single one of them files a hearing loss claim. And more respectively, the difference between a 616 and a 617 is we definitely see people who are in a gunfight and a gun is shot close to their ear, and that sets off the tinnitus, the ringing, the hearing loss. That's a 616 case, and it was related to the loud noises of exposure at work. But if you're in the range every day, they're trying to prevent the hearing loss with the hearing aids, et cetera. But if over time, because of the just repeated exposure, you end up with this hearing loss that a doctor will say is related in some fashion to your repeated exposure, then you should have the option of a 617 case.
All right, Ms. Anderson, thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you.
We'll proceed with the rebuttal. Mr. Schwartz, on behalf of the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honors.
And maybe you could follow up on Judge Tao's question. I mean, where does this fit within the legislative scheme here? Is there a gap, or is there some way that a person in Mr. Spangler's position actually can get recovery?
There's
compensation for what everybody knows is a dangerous job, but this is one of the unseen hazards.
Our legislature, since about 1993, has repeatedly added conditions that police officers and firefighters do not have a causation requirement if they meet certain durational requirements, durations of employment. So we started with heart and lung. Those are covered. There's no need for a causation requirement, but they didn't add hearing loss. Then they added cancer. Again, no need for a causation requirement. It's statutorily presumed to be causally connected. In the most recent legislative session, they added post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's under 616C180. So certain people, including police and firemen, don't have to show what everyone else has to show. And I'm not saying this law is bad. It's just that's what the law says. So to answer Judge Tao's question, the legislature has made a conscious effort over the past 30 years to add certain conditions and types of conditions to protect and to give to police and firemen so they don't have to show the causal connection that's required for either a 616 claim or a 617 claim. But they haven't added hearing loss. They've not put that in. It's not there. So the assumption I make and the argument I make is that if our legislature wanted us to have a conclusive presumption for hearing loss for police officers and firefighters, they would have put it there, or they will put it there. But as of this moment, in the ones they've added along the way, that has not been one of them. So we have to go back and look at 617440. We have no choice. The legislature has not added this despite the things they have added. And I think Ms. Anderson agrees with me, at least that's what I heard, that this should have been analyzed by Judge Howe under 617. So I'm not going to spend much more time talking about that. She then argues that because there's only a couple references to 617 in the appeals officer's decision, that it wasn't properly analyzed. The appeals officer analyzed this under 617.440. There are no other statutes. The rest of 617 deals with other types of occupational diseases, like I just said, heart, lung, cancer, silicosis, all kinds of things that aren't applicable to this case. 617.440 is the occupational disease statute, and that's what the appeals officer analyzed this case under. The judge in the district court wants us to apply, I'm assuming based on Ms. Anderson's argument, 617.366. And that is employment-related aggravation of a pre-existing condition, which is not employment-related. That's the title. And under subsection 1B, the requirement that Mr. Spangler must show before the burden shifts and before the statute is even applicable is that he contracted an occupational disease. So where does that take us? Right back to 617.440. The very first requirement of 617.440, section 1A, is that there must be a direct causal connection between the condition under which the work is performed and the occupational disease. And that, pursuant to the other cases I've given you, is a medical question. So when the question was asked of Ms. Anderson, we have a lot of different doctors' opinions. How do you balance that? That's the argument, Your Honor. We're not supposed to reweigh the evidence. It is a reasonable mind standard. Could a reasonable mind look at the opinion of Dr. Manfi, the two audiological opinions, they're PhDs, they're not MDs or chiropractors, and Dr. Becker's opinion, where he states without any argument that this did not come from the work duties. Can we look at those four things and say that Mr. Spangler has not met his burden? The answer is absolutely yes. We're not here to argue whether it was close or whether you could look at it a different way if you want to reweigh the evidence. We're here, as far as I'm concerned, to look at whether there was a legal error. And there simply wasn't a legal error because the appeals officer considered those four medical reports as indicated in the findings of fact. Finally, just very briefly, Ms. Anderson says that there's evidence that his work contributed to his hearing loss. That's not the standard. The standard is contained within 617.440. It's not contributed. It must be directly causally connected. And the medical evidence supports our argument that it wasn't directly causally connected. So under this court's prior rulings and under any of the case law you want to look at about burden-shifting statutes, we don't even get to 617-366. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Swartz.